Everyone knows you should never take a physicist to a sci-fi movie. The same can be said about a biologist and a creature feature. We can point out how certain things are biologically unlikely or downright impossible, but that would be boring. So rather than pointing out what can't happen, why not ask ourselves, what if it was real? So using my super nerd levels of knowledge about biology, physics, and mythical creatures, my friends and I will explore how different creatures could have actually evolved on our planet and what they potentially would look like. Welcome back, everybody, and welcome to A Real Creature Feature. My name is Mac.
I'm Mike.
I'm Gummer Dean.
Gummer Dean.
Okay, Gummer Dean.
Gummer Dean, he lost his one tooth. Now he's no longer Gummy. Now he's Gummy Dean.
And today we're going to be talking about the movie Tremors 2 Aftershock.
Yay. I love this one.
Yeah. And so for to change things up, Mike is going to take the lead on the speaking.
Dang right. I'm going to take the lead.
Just don't suck.
Yeah. When have I ever? I think, other than it was long-winded, I think I did a great job on Gattaca. Thank you very much.
All the time.
Do not
constantly
suck. Do not
and
suck.
Forever.
Do not suck.
Exactly, Dean.
Well, anyway, so I am going to take lead because Tremors 2 is my favorite movie in the whole series. And it was the first one that was the first of the many made-for-TV films. So we're just going to get right into it. The movie is set 6 years after the original. The film opens up in a deserty plain area in a section of Mexico called Chiapas. It's right near the Guatemala border, so it's super duper south.
Oh.
And we're watching a oil worker.
Play floor is lava.
Yeah. Sliding across a stretch of pipe trying to avoid touching the ground. Now, assuming this is a Tremors sequel, he must be trying to avoid something, maybe particularly a graboid. We don't know. We haven't seen the thing. So the worker gets near the end of the pipe, looks back to see a mound of dirt doing a Bugs Bunny, just lifting up and going across.
A surprisingly small amount of dirt, too.
Yeah, I mean, considering how long these creatures are supposed to be, but it's very much just pulling a Bugs Bunny.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets his idea, because something that would not be, I hate to say this, but I don't know if this is supposed to be the oil refinery, but it's just a series of barrels just hanging out for a distance.
Yeah.
None of them match. All of them various different colors.
Yeah. Almost I would assume.
In different grades of like
wear,
wear and tear.
Yeah. Like if this is a refinery, they are definitely like, they're definitely recycling their material, at least. But as he goes, he starts jumping from barrel to barrel to try to avoid the ground, which I argued not the best idea because you're still making vibrations that the graboid can hear. I understand he's like in a dangerous situation and trying to think it through. But my thought would be kick over the barrels so that it creates a distraction. Because it would just create this domino effect that the graboid would follow.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you could stay on the pipe, kick over the barrels, and one after one, so it would still go forward.
Yeah, but then you could then try and at least plan to make an escape attempt as the graboid's distracted by the barrels. But again, I'm not blaming the worker. He's just trying his best and is not like, you know, you're not in the right mindset when you're being trapped by a, you know, by a groundworm that can feel vibrations, you know?
And I assume also, like, in canon or in universe, they're like, he's heard of these creatures.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, people are like, oh, yeah, there's this weird thing that these people saw and found. Like, and that, like, that's it. That's the extent of his knowledge of it. He's like, he heard.
Well, and how many of his coworkers have died at this point?
Yeah.
We don't know.
Yeah, but we now know it's definitely a graboid because the barrels tip, he lands on the ground and gets swallowed up feet first by the graboid. So all you see is his face as he gets dragged back down into the ground. So super sad. Title card: Tremors 2 Aftershock.
Chick, 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 chick.
Yeah. So the movie then cuts back to Earl Bassett, still played by Fred Ward. Mm-hmm. He's living in perfection and running a small ostrich farm.
Is it perfection?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, he is perfection. Back in perfection. Yep.
A very small ostrich farm.
Yeah, it's only got two. Yep. And he's trying to make more babies. Because Earl is trying to convince the male ostrich to go over and make more eggs. So basically, this is what's left of any money that Earl and Val made from the Graboid encounter.
Because, I think only that Earl made. Just because Val isn't there. So
then there's four reasons. Yeah, it's Earl's cut. Fine. Yeah. If we're going to be pedantic about it. Yes, it's Earl's cut. I know you like to be pedantic. That's your thing.
Well, it's like, because if otherwise, then wouldn't Val be there?
No, no. And we're going to get to why Val's not there later.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is what's left for Earl. Throughout this scene, we see that Earl and Val, after the Graboid incident, made some national acclaim. They've been in magazines. They've been on TV. They've done a Reebok ad.
Which, by the way, I am very disappointed in Tremors 1 for not utilizing the evolution style for their ad for...
Just showing a Reebok ad at the end.
Yes. Have them be running and be like, we survived the Tremors because of Reebok.
Even though they were wearing cowboy boots.
Yeah. The whole thing. And I said, it's like, well, first of all, Dean, Reebok didn't pay money for this. They did not pay the good money for that. Yeah. I can almost guarantee you. And remember, Tremors came out a decade before Evolution came out.
Yep.
It was a completely different animal back then.
Yeah.
But they made some money off of this. And through a series of bad investments, not having a good manager or any manager to help him with, you know, handling his money, all that's left is basically his trailer, the ostrich farm, and memories. So Earl gets a shock when a cab driver named Grady Hoover, an admirer of Earl, brings an oil company executive named Carlos Ortega to the farm.
I have to add something for Grady. Grady, I thought it was a chain wallet, but no, it's just his keys are attached to a chain. Fingerless gloves, wears a bucket hat, and just happens to be an Earl Grady super fan.
Oh, the man screams. The man does scream like mid-90s appeal, you know?
Yeah.
Like, somebody thought that was cool, and it was a lot of people.
You want to know why he's called Grady? Because he's grating on my nerves.
Oh, he is absolutely that man. He is very grating. But yeah. Grady does bring up this oil executive, Carlos Ortega. Ortega, he runs the Petromaya oil refinery. He does know that Earl is one of the people who battled Graboids. And Ortega does inform Earl that a new Graboid infestation has broken out near his refineries. At that point, six workers have been killed. And they've had to shut down production at the field. Ortega wants to hire Earl as a Graboid hunter, which Earl initially refuses, basically claiming a combination of bad memories and a fear of dying are keeping him from taking the job.
Oh, what a whiner.
To be honest, I mean, your PTSD.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For that.
I mean, it's a terrible event. I wouldn't want to go back to fight those things.
He saw multiple people who were his friends die.
Yeah. So now what happened to Val? Ortega mentions that he tried to secure Val's services but got turned down, to which Earl says Val doesn't want to get killed because he's now married to a good woman. Mm-hmm. The implication that he married Rhonda. So yeah. Good ending for Val.
Yay.
Also, they didn't want to pay for Kevin Bacon. Understandable.
I saw something where their budget was cut or something because they did plan on having Kevin Bacon back and Reba McEntire, but the budget got cut, so they couldn't get him back.
I mean, it makes sense. Again, you're trying to make a made-for-TV movie, and we're actually going to get into this too, because Dean and I were very shocked by just how small the cast really was for this movie.
It didn't hit me until the credits.
Yeah. When you see all of eight people.
It was like a pandemic movie.
Yeah.
You know, 20 years before pandemic.
Yeah. And that's like one of the things where it's like, if you want to make a movie on the cheap, just don't hire a lot of people.
Yeah.
And it works because, you know, especially because for a movie like Tremors, the isolation really works, you know, because there it's like you feel that like we can't get anywhere. We can't do anything. We have to figure out how to fight these things alone, which is what worked for the original too. You know, this town of 14 people completely cut off from the rest of the world, basically. So Grady works to convince Earl.
Yeah.
And we finally actually get to see the inside of Earl's trailer, which has a lot of memorabilia from their tour and a cabinet Graboid arcade machine.
Classic.
Which looks awesome. I'm like, yeah. I want to know what that would be like.
Yeah.
And so Earl talks about the idea of like kind of, I think in a way, kind of changed after everything and lost all his money. And the one thing is that he brings up is really what he's kind of looking for is a good woman. And he has his ideal on the wall, a Playboy Miss October from 1974, which will come into play later.
This is one of the things I really do enjoy about these particular movies is they do so well at setting up things.
Yeah.
Like these tiny minor things. And I'm like, they set that up really well. I'm like, they do this later. And I'm like, I'm going to bring it up because I have it in my notes. But I'm like, wow, they did good story writing.
Yeah. Because you feel something, because it's like everything, it doesn't feel like there's a wasted moment. It might not seem like it initially, you know, but it's important later to either character development or story or something. And it really works out well. So after a little bit of convincing and the promise of a $50,000 bounty per Graboid, Earl eventually agrees to go. And they get supplies from the Mexican army, because apparently that's how it works. And really what they get is a few crates of dynamite and two CAR-15s. They are... I don't know what a CAR-15 is, but it's a rifle of some sort.
Okay. So it's basically probably the Mexican military's equivalent of a M16 or AR-15.
Yeah, could be. Yeah. I mean, it seems like it is an automatic rifle, at least by the looks of it. But again, I'm not a gun guy. I don't know much about it.
The one time they used it, it was Grady was shooting, but I don't remember if he did any auto fire or if it was only semi-automatic, like, because I didn't pay.
Maybe it's one of those ones that you can switch between, you know.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was like, I wouldn't be able to tell you, but it looks like an M16.
Yeah. So they do travel to Chiapas. When they get to the refinery, Earl and Grady meet Pedro, who is the chief engineer for the refinery, and Kate Riley, the company's geologist. She and Earl seem to feel some sort of an attraction. Like, there's some sparks, at least on Earl's part.
Both look at each other's butts.
Yeah, of course they do. Which, again, I also made comment on. I'm like, you forget that in the 90s, flat butts were a thing that people liked.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and don't get me wrong, Kate is adorable. Love her. Like, she is honestly very adorable. She's smart. She's a geologist. You know, she's great. Love Kate.
Yeah. As things go,
yeah,
he could do worse.
Oh, I don't know if he could do any better, really.
Yeah, exactly. Now, her, I don't know if she could do worse.
No, she probably couldn't. But again, it's about what you're looking for. And the one thing Earl is, he's resourceful, you know, more than anything else. He's a man who can improvise. And that's something that we can appreciate.
Yes.
And I think that's also the one thing that they've proven between Val and Earl in the first movie, they knew how to handle a situation. If something comes up, they usually know how to get it fixed, which I can appreciate.
Because it was just funny because it was great. This is before they left. He was like, this can be your big second chance.
Yep, exactly.
Do you mean at the very end?
No, that was big third chance.
Oh, okay. I was just making sure that you didn't accidentally jump to the end of the movie.
No, because that's the whole point of it. Goes back around to do this Graboid hunt. It's like, this could be your big second chance at fame.
Because I was like, wow, Earl's short by comparison to the guy from the Mexican oil refinery.
Yeah.
So then I looked it up, and Fred Ward is 5'10".
Wow.
So above average.
Yeah.
So I'm like, wow, he's actually fairly tall. And so, yeah, like, that guy's just tall.
Yeah.
And then I think I did know this, but I did, like, it just, I missed it or forgot about it. Sadly, Fred Ward died in 2022.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, that's not a terrible age to die at, though. Still.
But yeah, it just still made me sad. I was like, oh,
yeah, man. Of course. No, we should be. And it's like, but I say anyone who's over 75, and if you can make it to over 75, at least for me, if you die at that point, I'm going to be sad, but not super sad. Anything under 75 is just makes me real sad.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, so they talk about how the Graboids have been spotted 20 miles north of the refinery, and that's also where the workers got killed. So now we know where the workers were. So night before they start going on their hunt, Kate and Earl are hanging out, going over a plan of where to go. And Kate asks Earl, who named the creatures Graboids? And he talks about Walter and, you know, a little bit more having some bad memories about the attack on Perfection. And the whole scene where they're starting to connect, Grady interrupts them by being as loud as humanly possible.
Yep.
Just bringing in his own invention of a bunch of chains that he's attached tin cans to.
Yep. I have, Grady is a helpful idiot, at least.
Yeah. He tries. I mean, yeah. he definitely wants to do a good job, but unlike Earl, who wants to have the plan, Grady is very much the jump right in feet first, not really thinking about it. So the next day when they're going out for the hunt, they get into Earl's pickup truck, and Julio has installed a seismic vibration monitor on the truck. So they can now track where the Graboids are as they're going through the area.
Yeah.
Kind of neat. Pretty cool. Don't know how realistic it is. Don't care. It's a nice mechanic.
I think they called it like radio seismographs and stuff like that. And I'm like, I don't know enough about geology or any of that to actually be able to like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Or no, that's wrong.
Just remember, geology is not an exact science, Mac.
Here's a question.
Yeah.
Would an oil refinery like that be as picturesque?
I can tell you this right now. I don't know about the refinery side of things, but after a drill down and everything's all kind of taken care of, the landscape doesn't change all that much. Because once they have the pumps and the derricks and everything else installed, everyone's gone. It's basically every day a guy in a truck comes by and just makes sure that nothing needs to be maintenanced. Like, and I can tell you this from personal experience, as someone who did spend time in the oil fields of Texas, when you go down to those production areas, they're like basically empty. Like, it's like skeleton crews, small groups of people. So my guess is, though, that they're very active down there. To have six workers die and not knowing how many of them were actually there says to me that they're still constantly working. But yeah, once you're kind of done with like getting things set up, the land essentially on the surface does not like grows back and does not change all. So it could literally be that picturesque. So they go out, and Earl comes up with, like, between Grady's chains and Earl's pretty smart idea, the plan is they're going to attach dynamite to RC cars with a detonator, and they launch, and they basically just roam the RC. Once they have a Graboid within range, they launch the RC car. Graboid eats the dynamite and the car, and then they detonate the dynamite. Lo and behold, it works.
I'm a little really shocked. Well. I'm a little shocked that the Graboids would go after something so small.
You know,
with how much energy they're expending trying to get something that potentially small.
But yeah. Then it's also, if that's the only thing moving and you already expended the energy to get to that location.
Yeah.
You have to. Yeah. They're so big and they need so much material that it's one of those like,
yeah,
they have to do that. Otherwise, yeah they just wasted their trip.
And arguably at this point, though, knowing what's going to happen in the future, they could be acting a lot like how bears do when they're ready to hibernate and just going on a calorie hunt.
Like 100%, that is a thing.
Yeah. So it might not matter how small it is, as long as it's enough to get them the calories they need. Yeah. So, yeah. So it works, and throughout the day we get to watch a fun montage of them, capturing and exploding graboids, where they end up getting a total of 12 of them. So. That's current
$600,000. Yep,
$600,000. And so they basically end up with right now current bounty. And then they start talking about plans. Grady wants to kind of, for lack of a better term, exploit the graboids by basically opening up a graboid theme park, which would be kind of cool. But Earl wants nothing to do with this. He's like, I want my money. I want to safely invest it. And I just want to be able to live a comfortable life. I'm like, I'm going to do things differently this time. I'm going to be smarter about it. And Grady's like, no, you got to grab at it. Got to do these things. You got to live a little. And it's like, and Earl, I get Earl's side on this one as I've gotten older. Yeah. I totally get, like, younger, I would side more with Grady. Older, I'm understanding Earl's side of this story. It's like,
well, and then Earl already had that experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He doesn't need that again.
I would say, though, I would take some of that money and get myself a lawyer to get what I'm rightly due for the Graboids game.
Yeah.
That it also might have been like he didn't sign the like a contract. It might have been a contract reason why he didn't read the fine print.
Yeah. So which is part of the argument of. Yeah. Which is part of his argument of why he wishes he had had a lawyer at the time. Yeah,
but that's why I'm saying is like, even still, there's ways that he could claw back rights to that stuff.
Yep. So anyway, during the discussion, the hunt seems to go south because the chains get snagged by a passing graboid. It takes the truck and starts dragging it across the countryside.
But before that, I love this part. Because it's another one of those where it's like, oh, they really built like something into it.
Yeah.
They lose their radio because Grady left it on the ground.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Because that becomes first. A thing.
Well, yeah. Then yeah. I was like, oh, cool. This is going to be the Stumpy of this video. Yep.
Yeah.
Because you hear the part of it. But it's like, damn it. If this isn't Stumpy attacking and becoming cleverer.
Yeah, which was actually, it would have made sense because, yeah, he does come, because they only know he's coming back because they hear the radio.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was like, oh, okay, that's funny. Yeah, I forgot about that because they had that scene where he had swallowed the radio because he left it on the ground. Grady does not think these things through, honestly.
For somebody who's such a fan of that, he does a lot of stupid shit.
Yeah, he gets on the ground multiple times.
Yes.
And I'm just like, you're nuts. Like, I understand that you have something of an early warning system, but these things move fast. It's not like unless you have immediate access to get away, and then you're just leading them directly to you because they're going to go to your last known location. But that's Grady, man.
Yeah.
So they get dragged across, almost go over a cliff, but I'm like, Graboid's not in distress. It's not going to go over the cliffside. It's going to know that there's something there that it can't have. Yeah. So
traction is important. That's what I have.
Yep.
I was sitting there waiting for hoping that they put it into neutral because at a certain point it's like, okay, guys, you ain't fighting this worm. You're going for a ride. Put it into neutral.
And just wait it out because that's all you could do at that point. So eventually they make it to, eventually the graboid stops, drags it through until the chain breaks off after the truck hits a boulder. So the chain snaps off the truck and the graboid goes under the boulder because it's not fully ingrained deep in the ground. And then the seismic vibration monitor reports 8 more graboids are swarming the area around them. Well, they really can't.
Than eight.
Yeah,
that was a lot.
At least, yeah. I mean, it's a lot. I didn't keep an accurate count, but this is what the synopsis said there were. Mm-hmm. So basically, not sure what to do because they were not expecting this many when they started. They decide that they're going to retreat for now and call in reinforcements. Enter Bert Gummer. Bert has Bert's still living in perfection, is sitting in his rec room in the basement. I don't know what he was. I think he was watching. He was watching
World
something.
War II, sure. Something.
He was, yeah. I thought it was a Vietnam War.
Yeah.
It was black and white.
Yeah.
Still could have been Vietnam.
Yep. So, and again, he has his own like Hall of Fame items. Him and his wife being on copies of Soldier of Fortune, amongst other magazines. Also, Bert has the Graboid head that went into his rec room hanging on his wall. Still
awesome.
Agree. Yeah. I'm like, you know, you earned it.
All that was missing was for him to like crack a beer off of like one of its lower tusks.
Yeah.
So that you know, he can just crack open a beer to show how depressed he is.
Yeah. Yeah. Because he is in a low state now. Basically, Heather left him. At least at this point, it hasn't been made official that she's left him, but she's worried that he's become too paranoid, and she blames the collapse of the Soviet Union for his paranoid state.
Yep. I was like, she says it's because she blames my bad attitude on the fall of the Soviet Union, saying that you can't handle not having a constant looming threat.
And you know what? She might be right.
Yeah.
But the thing is, Earl says, we got Graboids down in Mexico. Bert says, I'm on my way.
Yeah. He has nothing else to do.
Yeah. What else is he going to do? Of course he'll join the hunt. Why wouldn't he? So, while they're waiting for Bert to arrive, they're at the refinery, just going over a new plan of attack, getting ready to prepare. And Kate's examining what looks like a fossil that they had found.
It was from a core.
A core sample.
It was a core sample. When she's examining the fossil, she notices that it looks like one of the spikes on the side of a Graboid. And basically, just looking at the record and dating on where the core sample came from, she believes that the fossil came from the Precambrian era, essentially a time before dinosaurs even existed, indicating that the Graboids are probably some of the oldest species that have existed on the planet.
For example, for people who don't know this, the Cambrian was 540 million years ago. So over half a billion years ago, that's where the core is from.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that to me is like, again, I'm not a geologist, and I also know geology is not an exact science, but it seems pretty crazy to me that these creatures would have existed since a time basically before dinosaurs,
mm-hmm.
and nobody really knows about them. Like,
it was like, clearly they leave fossils.
Yeah. So it's like, why haven't we seen anything about them if they're so ancient as far as that goes? And basically, Earl's a little upset because he really thought the Graboids may have come from outer space.
Technically, they could still be. If you want me to expand on that, I actually can.
I mean, I think we have time. You could if you wanted to for a little bit.
So one of the theories about where life might have come from on planet Earth is this idea that it actually did come from somewhere else. Because one of the ideas was, I think it's like spermatogenesis.
Yeah.
Theory.
Yeah.
And it's basically more complicated organic material landed on Earth with a asteroid or something like that, blah, blah, blah. And then because of that, it was able to jumpstart everything else.
Yeah.
So, like, that's okay. Why you could have, like, actually just giant leap of where things come, like, where stuff happens.
Okay. So the Graboids might have come from outer space. And then just hung out for a while.
Yeah.
Again, this is probably, to me, the more unrealistic thing is we should have had something about them, even a couple of crackpot theories at that point.
Yeah.
you know, just something about them, you know, not something just showing up suddenly in 1990.
Not if, and this shows up due to the fact that we've got a hollow earth.
Yeah, well, maybe. Again, yep. I'm just, look.
We haven't read the other books.
Yeah, we haven't seen the other movies. We haven't gotten there yet. But to me, that actually is, like, but again, unrealistic as it is, it's fine. I can suspend my disbelief for it. I'm not, you know, again, it's not somehow Palpatine survived. It's just not our focus right now.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not our focus. We are here to deal with the threat that exists now, which seems to be incoming because what they think is a graboid attack because the Vibrix vibration monitor is going off. It's whatever it is. It's big. Yeah, it turns out that Bert's arriving in a deuce and a half that he got from the Mexican army, along with 2.5 tons of high explosives, weapons, supplies, a round of military field rations. The man has come prepared for battle.
And a couple souvenirs.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
For his personal collection.
Yeah, Kate was just like, ha, 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 ha. Bit much, don't you think? And nobody laughs with her, and they just stare at her, and she's like, what?
Yeah, it's a they take the graboid threat seriously. I mean, Earl was coming out to just fight, you know, what he thought might be 5-6 graboids, and then it turns out to be such a high number that they're like, we need someone who's a little more prepared. And
I gotta say, I keep on wanting to slap Burt Gummer occasionally throughout the movie.
Yeah.
Because this one is like, you only brought one case. It's like, Burt, we had 4 of them in Pleasant Valley.
Perfection.
What?
It's perfection.
All right. Perfection.
Thank you.
We had 4 of them. We heard that only so many people died down here. So one case should be enough to take care of.
Yeah.
So you're upset that he got more than one case?
No, I'm upset about Bert's attitude.
Yeah. He's upset that Bert would be very, like, making fun of them for making the choices they did, given the information they had.
Okay.
And this constantly comes up with Bert.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and it goes both ways as the movie progresses. It really does, because that's the thing that makes this whole thing so crazy. But Bert, basically given the chance to get his Christmas list from the Mexican army, requests everything he can under the sun. And why wouldn't he? So they basically they talk about how he's coming prepared. He's got more explosives that make the homemade pipe bombs look like cherry bombs in comparison. Bert gives Earl an elephant gun, because why not? You should be at least a little more prepared for the situation. Got to be careful, though, because it has a kick that could break your collarbone if you don't have it pressed correctly against your shoulder.
I'm like, I think that's probably true, but I'm like, those look like very narrow bore. Like, one of them looked very, like, it looked like a normal rifle barrel.
Shotgun versus an elephant.
Yeah,
I don't disagree with you, because they definitely don't look like you. They definitely didn't look like a standard elephant gun. But I also don't read
on the last movie.
Yeah.
So how much were they going to pay for a live?
$100,000.
I would have thought, you know, dudes, Bert, hey, you want a little bit extra cash? Yeah, killing is fun, but how about tranquilizing?
Yeah.
The only problem with that idea is, I'm going to bring up this really sad topic, but it's Harambe. So there was a lot of people that were complaining about, like, oh, why did they shoot Harambe? Why didn't they just try a tranquilizer or everything else? It's actually really, really hard to tranquilize things.
Yeah.
Because the thing about it, it's like, if you...
You have to know their metabolism to properly...
Yeah, super high degree. And, like, even with that, they did know his metabolism, but they're like, to be able to put down an animal like that is really difficult, because you could just kill them.
Yeah.
And also, how are you going to shoot a tranquilizer into one of those things?
Yeah. The thick hide is really a challenge on that.
Yeah.
Is there a way to get it to surface and then have its mouth open? Because that's how he killed the first one.
There, yeah, you would have to have something that it could eat to do that. But the problem with that is it's going to be slower acting if he eats it, and then it's going to go to sleep somewhere.
Yeah.
What if you created a so big, so big concrete platform, and then in the center, well, they don't smell, do they?
No, nope.
It's just mainly vibrations.
It's all vibrations for those babies.
It would be cool to get. Oh, it would be cool to get something like something. Get a speaker that could do elephant bass.
Bass.
Going through the ground so that it's enticed to come up onto the platform to get whatever's there. And then when it pops up and is ready to open its mouth to get whatever it's coming for, and then shoot a tranquilizer in its mouth, because we know that's the soft part.
I mean, there are ways. There are ways.
The best way that would probably be is to get it and then have it in something that it would eat, but it would also have a tracker in it so that you can just scoop it up later.
I mean, or else, my opinion, the only good graboid's a dead graboid.
And to go back to the thing is like, well, you don't know, you might kill it. Well, it's at least a better chance, you know. If it's dead, it's dead.
Yeah, but if it's trank, there's a possibility that you could bring it back alive.
Yeah.
Or at least even the worst case scenario, at least you could bring back a whole one.
Yes, which would be still very useful for science.
Yeah. Anyway, Rosso brought a 50 caliber BMG based on a World War I anti-tank cartridge. So it's a, that'll come into play later, because again, Bird ain't taking any chances. He is going to take out a graboid one way or the other. So the hunt resumes with Earl, Grady, and Bert all going out. Bert going out on his own and Earl and Grady going back out together. And now it's a competition.
Not a competition. Well, our scores are.
Yeah.
Also, I want to bring up this one. I did love the stupid MRE sales pitch.
Oh, yeah. I argued with Dean. I'm like, you know, some MREs can be quite good. Yep. You know?
I've heard
you know, but some
and
of them.
That's why you got to make sure that they're wrapped in metal.
Yeah. There are some really good MREs out there. They're, you know, and I'd be all for it. And they're a great meal for when you need to survive. They're not the meal you want to make your regular basis off of.
No. I think to actually be considered like an MRE, it has to actually have like a 27-year, or this is years ago when I heard this one.
Yeah.
It was like a 27-year shelf life.
Which could
or
be,
something
yeah.
like that. That just means that it's not food at that point.
Yeah. It's not just true. Not true. Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, technically it is. I mean, Earl did complain that his tasted like toilet paper.
That's because he ate the toilet paper.
Yep. Earl, I think that's the toilet paper.
Again, what I love about these movies are also they're not afraid to just have fun.
And the little tank, because it was going with when they go off, they split up, and it was like, I love the fact that his was like, oh, I'm going to use a tank RC
yep.
car.
Yeah.
And he uses 4 pounds of C4.
I know. Might have been a little excessive. I mean, they'd even talked about it. As they progressed, they started using less dynamite because they found that one stick was enough to stop the graboid without creating a huge mess.
Yep.
Now, when they were cleaning off their truck after Bert did the C4, were they trying to imply that it was Bert's explosive that rained on them?
I think so.
I 100% believe that. Because they talk about A, hearing the explosion, and I am 100% sure that that was all shrapnel from his explosion. Because they, again, like when you see them, like as they're getting later in the day, you only see like this tiny little burst after they detonate. So it's not like they're covering the truck anymore in goo.
I'd like to point out, like, if you swallowed an M80, you would die.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you don't need, it's not, you don't need all that much to kill these things. No, like, but the only reason why you would want that on some level is just so that you would actually see the explosion. Because I'm like, once again, if you've used a quarter stick of dynamite and they ate it, it probably would kill them too. But it would like eventually kind of, and then you would never know.
Yeah, but what you want is the assurance.
Yes.
You want to make sure that the graboid is down, which is why they started with essentially three or four sticks. Yeah, three or four sticks combined. And then they got it down to one where you could see the explosion. So you knew it happened and you're like, okay, it's done. But Bert's whole thing is, if you're going to do something, do it excessively.
There's no such thing as overkill.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really how it goes. But the graboid, they start following, they get a seismic reading on Earl and Grady's seismograph. And the odd thing is, it's going away from them. So honestly, not their smartest move, because if they're learning, this feels like a trap to me.
And that's what they say. Or that's what Earl says. He's like, no, these things are too smart. I don't like it.
Yeah, this would be a trap. And they still follow it. They get the signal. And when they reach they get to the top of a hill, they see that the graboid has surfaced. In a panic, Earl backs his truck down the side of the hill into a pile of boulders and cracks the rear axle.
Yep.
So, rest in peace, truck.
Yeah, that was a good truck. I really liked that truck.
Yeah, it was a nice truck. So Earl and Grady keep watching the graboid to see if it's going to move. It hasn't. It just keeps making loud noises, seeming to be in pain of some sort. And Earl and Grady just keep watching it through the night because they're basically not going to be able to leave. They don't have a truck. They have to wait for Julio to get out there with his truck to come pick. Oh, sorry, Pedro. Right, not Julio. Yeah, Julio's another guy who's shown up, who is Kate's assistant in this. Sorry, I forgot to bring him up too. But yeah, they have to wait for Pedro and his truck, and so they're just keeping tabs on the graboid. As they go, night falls, and they go up to check on the graboid, and it's hollowed out. They have no idea what happened. Grady thinks animal attack, and they said no animal. Like, we would have heard something if it was an animal, especially to do this kind of damage this fast.
But if you look carefully at where the glass has landed, it came from inside the creature.
Something new. This is what I have wrote. Something new is afoot. So that's what, and I was like, so that's what the inside of a graboid looks like, minus all the organs and stuff. And also, this is something very important, and it brings up with like the biology of the graboid in itself. Notice how the thing isn't collapsed in on itself.
Yeah.
So that means that there's an internal structure. I'm not saying like it has an internal skeleton or anything like that, but there is a semi-rigid structure that allows that shape to consist.
I mean, it kind of makes sense though, because I mean, it could be either, you know, with the insides, it could be either a thick leathery hide inside and out.
Yeah. Or a cartilagic structure.
Yeah.
Is there, now they specifically mention metamorphosis, but is there a case where an animal metamorphoses and multiplies? Like,
in how anything is ever explained with these things, or the examples that we've ever seen, I have never heard of a situation like this in nature. There is no situation in nature where you have one creature that turns into three like that.
Okay.
It's really interesting. Now, because I was watching an episode, like I can talk about this later with like the biology and everything else, but I'm like, there is a certain situation that like can kind of partially explain certain aspects of this, but no. they no. totally it's totally like they didn't want to they were like, hey, this would be a cool idea if this happened.
Yeah.
I've no idea. There's nothing.
I mean, they are fictional, and there's gonna be a line that we're gonna get into later as we progress in this thing. But it's again a movie for its time, and again, you're talking about creating a fictional creature. It could do things. I mean, in nature, it could make sense.
I was just looking for like, and that was a question that I had in my mind, and I was just wondering if there.
Oh no! 100%. It's a good question because how does. When I was watching a video and they're like talking about this, supposedly it's either 3 to 6 that can erupt out of a graboid.
Yeah. So, yeah, because we're now getting to the main crux of Tremors 2. Pedro arrives with the truck, but is like a short distance away and stops. And they can't figure out why. So they walk over to Pedro's truck and Pedro gone. Well, most of Pedro's gone.
He did the whole Samuel L. Jackson gag.
Yeah.
From Jurassic Park.
Yep. And they know that. So something has happened. Pedro's truck has been destroyed. And they are like, what do we do? What could have caused this? They have no idea yet. And so they only reach to their next decision. There's a radio tower not too far away. It's like, we got to risk it. We got to try and reach out to someone. We have to head to the radio tower.
Yeah.
So they head to the radio tower. Radio tower destroyed.
I love that the area. It's radio tower plus freaking like another complex.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff in that tower. But they get to the radio tower. It's damaged. They can't reach out to anyone. But this is where they see something new. It looks like a little two-legged, like, weird, almost graboid-ish creature. And they're like, I ain't seen nothing like this in my life. Yep. And it goes on the attack. Earl and Grady are able to take out the one they see. And then two more show up. They find a car at the radio tower that they're able to hotwire and get going.
Which I want to learn how to hotwire now.
Honestly, the way they do it in the movies is not the way it works in real life, but that's besides the point. Yeah. But that's besides the point.
Yeah.
Oh, it's easier nowadays. I mean, have you heard of the Kia Challenge?
Mm-hmm.
You can really steal a Kia, no problem.
Yeah, I live in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
It's actually more expensive to have a Kia or a Honda, or maybe it's Hyundai. I can't remember which one it was. One of those H ones. Your insurance is actually higher if you have one of those two cars because it's so easy to steal.
Absolutely. So as they make their escape, we are now going to dub because these creatures communicate with each other by making loud screeching noises into the air. So we are going to call these creatures Shriekers.
Even though they don't mention it in the movie.
Yep. They don't give it a name, but we are going to dub them Shriekers just for the sake of doing this. Yep. So they take the car back and we cut back to Bert, who is now, because there's been no radio communication for a while. They don't know. He doesn't know what's happening. It's getting dark. He decides to return back to the refinery. On his way back to the refinery, his truck is attacked by a group of Shriekers. So we don't know what happens after that, because then it cuts back to early in the morning and we are seeing Kate at the refinery still trying to reach out to anyone who's out on the field. No one has done anything. No one's saying anything. But Julio gives Kate a surprise jump scare because that's what you got to do in this movie. So she's worried that she hasn't been able to contact anyone, asks Julio to get in his car and go out and see if he can find them. He agrees and then is attacked by a Shrieker.
Yep.
So We just see him start to almost be dragged away from the window as Kate tries to pull him in.
I thought at first he was doing the bullshit thing that Melvin did.
Yeah, earlier. But Julio also didn't know that the Shriekers were out there. So how could he fake it?
No, but I'm just like, at first I'm like, oh, this little shit. And then it's like, he spurts out blood. And I'm like, oh!
Yeah, no, he's a goner,
and
which
he's
really
just
sucks.
Spurting out blood for biting off a leg or biting at a leg at that point.
I could have been bitten in the side.
I just it looked like it was an overreaction to getting your leg bit.
I mean, how do you know? Maybe in his fury bit his tongue. You don't know. Could have been anything. Not that it matters. You know, we're gonna miss Julio because he will be dead now from here on in.
Yeah.
But Earl and Grady arrive in time, kill the Shrieker before it can get in and get to Kate. But another Shrieker appears as they're trying to make their escape and destroy the car that they had just driven in on. And Earl kills that one with an elephant gun, sees that there, and they basically come to this consensus that it seems like three Shriekers come out of each Graboid that they've seen. So there are supposed to be eight more left. Counting them all up, if all the Graboids went through this metamorphosis to become the three Shriekers, that means that there would be, after the kill count that they had, there's 21 Shriekers left. Because there would have been 24, they've killed three. So they get really scared because, again, more shaking's occurring. They don't know what it could be, but fortunately, it's Bert.
And he there was survived. No special music for him riding over the hill in his redded out army truck.
Yep. Oh, that poor truck. The deuce and a half is, it's seen better days.
Yes, but it has.
Bert is angry because he's like, why did I inform that this was going to be a situation? It's like, because no one knew.
This is the other one that I'm pissed off at him because, like, first of all, Bert, you were there in fucking perfection. Did this happen in perfection? No. So, A, you wouldn't know, and they wouldn't know. And the only weird thing happened was once they got a live one that was sitting there not moving, just shrieking in pain.
Yeah. Well, and so the whole thing is Bert's upset for obvious reasons. I think he's more upset that he's out of ammo because that's never happened to him before. I swear, baby, this has never happened to me.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, Roy doesn't say that, but yeah, he was like, for the first time, I'm entirely out of ammo, which that doesn't make sense to me because I was like, how could you be out of ammo? I'm like, I can guess like you'd be out of ammo in your truck, like in the cab. That makes sense. Okay, yeah, I can get that. But I'm like, you didn't have more in your in the back?
Yeah, talking about being unprepared, I mean.
And these little guys, they don't seem to take much to take down. So, yeah, you were taking on 24.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It doesn't seem like it's the... They're not as tough as Graboids are. Like, Shriekers definitely have a little bit of a softer body. They definitely, like, you know, you don't want to face them head on because it does look like their skull, it looks like their face plates are very hard.
Yes.
But the side of their bodies are very soft, which will come into play later. But Bert was able to capture one of the Shriekers alive. So they make an impromptu cage and put it in a cage and try and figure out just what the heck, how this thing operates.
Where did they get a cage that was the perfect size?
I don't know. And it doesn't matter to me anymore. It really doesn't. It is, again, another thing that I'm like, I'm just trying to figure out why they would have a cage. Not that it matters. Maybe it's a thing that all refineries have. I don't know. I didn't work out there that long.
This is where you go when you're being a bad boy.
Yeah. How do you know? Look, this is Mexico. No rules, just right. Chiapas, Mexico. Like, yeah, go to the punishment cage. I don't like the punishment cage.
Oh, anyway.
Yeah. But so their first test is to just try motion, just straight up motion where they have a broom, move the broom around, no response from the Shrieker. They hit the broom on the side of a table, no response from the Shrieker. Bert stands up, little flappies go up in its head, and then it starts shrieking. So the revelation is Shriekers see by heat. So basically they realize, as Grady says, you mean they're acting so smart because they're so stupid? They'll just attack anything that gives off a heat signature. That could include a hot truck engine, could include a radio tower giving off a lot of excess heat, could be anything. As long as it has a heat signature, the Shrieker goes after it, seeing it as something of potential food source. Now, in lieu of not really having much to do with heat, if it, and this is the same way, why the Shrieker shriek is they seem to produce a lot of body heat. So when they shriek, it gives off heat to call the others there.
Oh, we'll jump back to this in a second because you're going to get to what's happening next.
Yeah. So they're trying to kind of figure out, because they also notice that in lieu of when they're not really looking for anything with heat signature, they kind of just lull their tongues on the ground and just start searching for things using their tongues, just kind of tasting about, probably just looking for anything that could be a potential caloric food source. So Grady throws in part of an MRE into the cage. Shrieker picks it up and eats it right away. And during that time, we also see a Shrieker has fallen out of the bottom of Bert's truck and is now doing the same thing and has picked up an MRE that is on the ground and is eating it as well. When we see it, the Shrieker eats the food, starts to do something, and then hocks up a hairball or a slime ball that turns into a baby Shrieker. And Kate says a line. Again, it's 96. It was a different time, but it was also the wrong word. Kate says, hermaphrodites. It reproduces without sex. I'm like, that's asexual reproduction, Kate. I know you're not a biologist and geology is not an exact science, but...
Yeah. Hermaphrodite just basically means has both sex organs.
Yeah.
But, it's still sexual reproduction.
Yeah. There is no, yeah, this is a non-sexual reproduction. It's fully asexual. It just creates another smaller version of itself that seems to be growing very fast.
To which is what I was talking about. So with this, these things violate laws of conservation of mass and a bunch of thermodynamics. Because you're like, they eat until it then pukes up a baby, and then it's starts growing really, really fast. So because of how fast it is, that would also produce a lot of heat. So it would have to have a huge amount of caloric intake to allow for the generation of a body like that. And then a huge amount of heat would be produced. So these things could be pumping out a lot of heat. Yeah. Like a lot of heat to also as a way of cooling off too.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about that too is then they can distinguish each other from like normal animals or anything, their body temperature actually could be higher. So let's go with like if it is in a how we see the infrared spectrum, like when you see it on movies, like blue is background cold, red is warm, and then it was everything. So it was like if they see then something that's white, then they're like, oh, don't eat that because that's us.
That's one of us, yeah.
And I thought I thought they were also going to be leading into sort of like a heat echo location sort of thing.
Which, yes, that actually can happen. But the only problem with that is the notion of that would be only for navigation purposes. That definitely wouldn't be for, I don't think it could be for hunting, because you're, let's go yelling heat at something and then it gets warmer, then that you can see it, but it wouldn't be like, oh.
Yeah, it wouldn't be able to tell that this is something that we could eat. I was just like, oh, that's an interesting idea. I don't, you know, nobody's ever brought up heat echolocation to actually navigate the world around them before.
But no, that is actually a really good idea. Never thought about that. But yeah, you scream into an area and they're like, then you know if something's like right in your face.
Yeah. No, and that's, again, I'm not fully against this. There's a lot of like for suspension of disbelief, science fiction animals, there's a lot of sound science in like trying to come up with an idea for them. I'm not against them.
No.
And they're very cool.
Oh, also wait, I did want to add this one. Because it was just really funny. Shriekers are somehow actually caring parents.
Yeah. So when, he's just like,
yeah, when he was like, he was nuzzling
his nose. I'm like, that is such a crazy idea of like, you came from me. Aww. Come on. Get up, little guy.
Come on. You can do it.
Yeah. So there is a big fear of not knowing what to do because, you know, given enough time, and if they, you know, given enough time, this could cause an explosive growth of these Shriekers, which who knows what that's going to do to the cycle now, because we don't actually understand what a Graboid's life cycle actually is. Yeah, all we know is that these things can grow exponentially then if they can grow fast enough. So they hit a bit of fear. And unfortunately, the one Graboid, that the one Shrieker that they had that fell out of the truck has now revived and is now either reproduced, revived, or something. And now the building is compromised.
Because Bert brought 100 pounds of MREs.
Yes. So they all make a break for it to try and find another safe building to get to. Kate warns them that the building they're running to is not going to be a good place to be because it's only one wall and a foundation.
I was like, why would you have a door?
Dean said the exact same thing. He was like, why is it built this way? I'm like, I don't know. I can't give you an answer for this.
And it's not like they put up the steel studding around the whole perimeter of what was going to be the building.
Yeah.
That would make more sense, you know. Oh, we've already put up the steel studding for this building. Let's start with this wall. That's going to have the door. And then we'll do the other ones that don't have the door.
To our tens of listeners, if any one of you has any answers for why you would build a pole building like this, let me know.
I have an answer. As a movie backdrop.
Oh, yeah.
That's it!
They're just filming That's it.
Yep.
But yeah, if there's any reason why you would make a pole building like this, let me know. Let us know. realcreaturefeature@gmail.com. We will make it happen. So Bert gets an idea because there are a couple of loose doors behind the wall.
No, Earl.
Oh, sorry, not Earl. Sir, right. I'll always confuse the two because this becomes, after this, it basically becomes the Bert Gummer show.
Yeah.
So Earl, being the improvisational genius that he is, basically covers up like 99% of their body with the door. So that basically all you can kind of see is just little hands, like little fingies at the sides holding the door. So basically they walk across to try and get to another safe zone, which is great. And their plan is to, Julio has a truck that should be pretty close, but they have to get to it. So they get to a safe spot where there's some basically building materials. And the only thing standing between them and the truck is one Shrieker. And the Shrieker has to be taken out. Bert pulls out his 50 caliber rifle and takes a shot at it.
His anti-aircraft rifle.
His anti-tank rifle.
Big gun for maximum penetration.
Yes. That's the one that uses the 50 caliber rifle. The Shrieker explodes. That's the only term you can use. It explodes.
And leaves behind a small hole in the concrete, or no, cinder block.
Yeah, it's a cinder block wall, yeah.
It's a cinder block wall, which then has...
Which is another thing. A random cinder block wall with a concrete mixer.
Yeah. Again, who knows what they were doing there? We don't know. Hey, remember, Doc and his wife were waiting for the cinder blocks to come in for their house. We don't know what they were there for. We're not here to judge yet. We're just here to watch things happen.
I do love, because like how you do this in a, for practical effects purposes, is just because they had the thing just standing there.
Yeah.
And then they blew it up. And then you see a hole there. So like the hole is there to begin with. But then they just blew it up to reveal it. And I was like, oh, that's actually, you know, it's simple.
It's just blocked by a Graboid puppet, which, by the way, I love the Shrieker puppets. I think they're fantastic. And I'm grateful that they use the puppets so much because, it, made for TV movie, the CG is not great.
No.
But then behind the cinder block wall, you store 15 barrels in a single file line.
Oh, they're not fully in a single file line, but there's like a barrel and you see the bullet holes going through it. You see another all this trash has like
this.
Yeah. It's all like, the 50 caliber bullet has gone through everything and then stops in the middle of Julio's engine block.
I don't know if it stops. Because we didn't see the other side of the truck.
Yeah.
So I assumed it just went straight through there too.
Engine blocks are thick though. Like the whole point is by then passing through all of that soft, like I'm going to say thin and soft material, the bullet has slowed down and like an anti-armor, like it is again, an anti-tank weapon. Like that's the whole point of that 50 caliber bullet. Even then an engine block is thick. It's very thick. It's heavy. My guess is that that bullet got halfway through the engine block and then stopped. That would be my guess.
Yep.
Because it would go through tank armor, yes. I don't necessarily think it would go through all of the mechanics of a tank.
No. It would just, when you use it against a tank, what you hope for is that it would start ricocheting on the inside of the tank.
Yeah. So now they're without a vehicle. They can't escape now. So again, and this is the problem with Bert, he's acting like this isn't his fault.
But it's everybody else's fault.
Yeah. Bert has a lot of things where he doesn't want to blame, where he doesn't want to blame himself. And I'll give him the next one that happens after this that's not his fault. You know, because you couldn't have known, and Dean will bring up the ridiculousness of the situation that comes towards the end.
Yeah.
Because now, we are now in a problem of, they have to get the high ground. Shriekers can't climb. So Earl, Grady, and Kate all get to the top of an oil tower, and Bert ends up getting into the bucket of a payload. So basically, you watch Bert as he as little tongues are starting to try and find him and just can't seem to do it. And the reason why they're hiding where they are is Shriekers can't climb because they're just weird little bipedal guys who
they can't only have legs and a mouth.
Yep. They have a mouth and they must shriek.
Yeah.
But
could they technically climb up a ladder? Yes. But it would take a lot of coordination.
Yep. They don't quite have that coordination. But we don't have to worry about that for now. So now this is where we get some payoff because Earl and Kate now kind of get a chance to talk about things, you know, life plans. And he finds out that Kate had done some modeling back in college. Specifically, an issue of Playboy in October of 1974. So it turns out Kate was the model that Earl has been longing over for years at this point. Just in a strange, ironic twist of life.
Yeah.
I was like,
what are the chances? And it's like, it doesn't matter because I'm like, I still enjoy that.
It's a movie. It's funny. It's fine. It's a great coincidence. Yeah. But no, Val doesn't get his dream woman. He's got to toss all those pictures. No, but Earl gets his. Though, to be fair, Val's was very superficial. You know, like, he didn't know Kate was Miss October 1974. He just liked her for who she was.
It was Chekhov's centerfold.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
It really was.
I do like for at least these two movies, it was, they have a trend where the pretty woman is the smartest one there.
Yeah. Yeah. No, she, and usually that's really nice. Cause again, like what really works is usually like Rhonda did have a good combination of what I call book and street smarts. Like she helped them, she figured out ways to get out of situations herself.
Yeah.
Kate tended to be a little bit more book smart than street smart, but not that that really matters. But, you know, that's what gives them, you know, but they are very smart. It's not like they're not just there to be eye candy. They're not just there. They're there to perform a function in the world, which is nice. I like that.
And they're not they're not just the damsel in distress.
Yeah. No, they tend to. Yeah, because they tend to help with situations. So, you know, things seem to be going a little too well. Things are a little too calm. So the Shriekers have to do something. Well, they learn how to stack on each other. So they're now trying to reach the top of the, they're trying to reach the top of the oil tower by just stacking on top of each other, like two columns each, and just keep going. And I said, not a huge problem yet, because once they get high enough, just kick them over.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just someone's just got to stay on Shrieker duty. Just, you know, there's not a lot of them yet. Just, you know, kick them over. So the plan is now they have to do something, because what else are you going to do?
Yeah.
So Bert, now no longer under attack by the Shriekers, basically creates a distraction, tries to get them into like the main building where they were in, gets into one side, has the door shut behind him, and he goes out the other side, closing like the big garage door behind him. Good news. It works. Now all the Shriekers are in one place. Bad news. For some reason, the storage room they're in is filled with sugar, flour, cornmeal. Why? And I Dean actually asked the question why, and now that I've had a chance to think about it, I think I know the answer.
It was not individual things, though. It was candy.
Yeah. One of them was definitely candy, for sure, because I can't remember, but they definitely used the Spanish word for candy or caramel. So it was definitely something. But part of me does believe that what that is, the refinery probably is far enough away from everything. Like where I worked, you know, you were always about 20, 30 miles from another town, you know? So if you had to go somewhere, so you had to haul in supplies. My guess is that this was a supply haul in, you know, like that, like they probably have to cook there. And it was that thing of, and you know, sometimes you do want a sweet treat, Dean. I'm not saying that there just needs to be a whole box of candy. I agree with you.
The thing, though, is they were reading off ingredients that go into the items that were in the box.
Yeah. Which, yeah, again, I'm not saying, like, look, I'm not saying it's perfect. I'm just saying I have theories.
I'm just like, you know, if you're hauling in stuff, it would be one thing to say, oh, this is the box of these spices. This is the box of those things. But just to have them going in for like penny candies.
I know. I understand your feeling on it. And I'm not saying it's a perfect, like, it's not a perfect theory by any means, but it's my theory about why there was a storage room filled with candy and flour and every, you know, and other items like that. There's a potential reason, and it's a good enough reason for me not to be like, oh, suspend disbelief, you know, suspend
disbelief. But were they boxes of individual things? Because the thing that gets me is they were listing off the ingredients that made the candies on the outside of the box.
Which, you know, again, depending on which side of the box it is, it might just be an ingredients list that they could see. I'm not, like again, carbs. Yeah, I'm not arguing the fact, like, I understand your frustration. Do, you know, I share some of it with you. I'm just saying, on reflection, I think I have a theory about why it was there, you know, because otherwise it seems a little ridiculous that they just have a storeroom that's filled with seemingly raw material for cooking, you know? And, you know, seemingly raw material and candy. That's what it is. That's what it seems like. Again, I'm not an expert on any of this, and I'm not a biologist. I've only worked in the oil fields for 6 months. And also, geology is not an exact science. I'm going to keep saying that this entire time. I don't know. I'm just saying I'm going to at least partially defend why there's just a giant storeroom filled with foodstuffs. You know, other than it helps to create a bigger Shrieker problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only thing that my more complaint is, it's clearly the same garage area where they bring in the truck. I don't know what that garage area is for. If it's not just like, is it just a giant storehouse?
Offload. Yeah. You just have, it's for storage. That's generally what you'd get for all that stuff.
Yeah. So anyway. Well, now that they know, and again, I don't blame Bert for this one. This one actually isn't his fault. He couldn't have known that all that stuff was there. This is the one pass he gets on this. All his other not my faults were at least in some way his faults.
Yeah.
So anyway, this one wasn't his fault, but now they have a concern. Obviously, it's a Shrieker feast in there. There's going to be a problem that they have to now deal with this somehow. So the plan is, Earl, well, how it ends up being as a running gag in this, Earl and Grady are trying to play the rock, paper, scissors game the entire time.
And Grady is extra dumb.
He does not understand this. I'm like, he was never a child, apparently. He was just, he was born fully formed from his father's head, you know, at like 26, apparently.
No, it was that taxi car after getting plenty of skin samples and sperm samples from people doing it in the back of the taxi after years and years of amalgamation. It finally popped out a guy in a bowl hat.
In a bucket hat and fingerless gloves.
Yes. Right in the middle of the 1990s.
The perfect 90s specimen. But yeah, so Grady does not understand rock, paper, scissors. So basically, Earl beats him every time. So the plan is they need to get into the building and basically stop the Shriekers. Earl's plan? Coat himself in contents of a fire extinguisher, which is
CO2.
And Grady's like, no, I'll do it. I'll be the hero. You know, trying to pull. And Earl tricks him by saying, because Grady technically wins, because it's Earl gets rock, Grady gets paper. And Earl says, nope, you lose. Rock destroys paper. And Grady's just absolutely confused by this. Like, fully flummoxed, goes out, and Earl at least, like, covers up as much of his skin as he can, and then gets coated in fire extinguisher in CO2. Super cold. Yep. And then starts to pass in. And again, feels at least like it's a plan. It's going to work for temporarily. They let Earl in. He's able to sneak around the Shriekers pretty successfully. And as he gets to the truck, he's starting to melt, which makes sense also. It's not going to last very long.
No.
So Earl gets in there, sets a bomb, just starts typing in random numbers on an explosive, throws it into the back where the other barrels, where there's two or three barrels of what are just, say, in, like, on a black barrel, white print, explosives.
Yup.
He throws the bomb back there and then starts to reach for higher ground as the Shriekers start to identify that, oh, there's a heat signature in here. Time to go.
Time to go a-hunting.
Yep. So they start. Earl makes his way to Earl gets to a little bit of higher ground, but can't get to any escape routes. Because there is a window on the second story, but he just can't find a way to reach it.
Yeah. Because he's too short.
Yep. So
by like feet and feet.
Yep. Yeah. So the plan is there's a fire extinguisher hose attached to the building. They start pulling it out, and still not quite long enough. So Bert goes down with what has to be the world's sharpest knife. Just one quick cut, and it's taken off.
I want to bring this up. So boot knives are useful.
Yeah.
Because if you need one, everything else. But you know what's more useful?
What's
having the knife on your belt?
Yeah.
Because see him reaching for it in his boot, and it was just like, and it's like a full size knife. It's not an actual dedicated boot knife.
Yep.
It was just like, what are you doing? Why would you do that?
Yeah. But it's ridiculous. It's still Bert, because Bert's a ridiculous human being and we love him for it. They get the hose. They finally get the hose long enough so that they can actually get Earl out of there. And he says, everyone get down and run. It's like, how much time do we have? I was like, I don't know. I just set the detonator. We have to go.
And I threw it in your truck.
Yep. To which Bert responds, there's 2.5 tons of explosives in there. So for those of you who don't know math.
Are you saying that's not enough? Please, Bert, tell me that it's enough.
Oh, so it's going to be more than enough.
Have Bert say at the end, yes, that's enough.
Yeah. And so he's like, just keep running. So the whole point is they've got to book it, because that's 5,000 pounds of high explosives. They run.
First, they stop behind a building, and then Bert's like,
keep going.
No.
We're not there yet. Keep going. Oh, yeah. And so they're running, and then they eventually hit a trench. Again, not knowing how much time it's going to be, is like, this has to do. This has to be enough. Get down, stay down, cover your ears. And Grady, in his infinite wisdom, doesn't get down in the trench. Why? Because, like, it's going to be big. And then Grady's like, is it going to be today? And it's like, just get your ass in the trench. It doesn't matter when it goes off. It's going to be gigantic when it does.
Yep.
And it is. And Grady loses his hearing because he doesn't get into the trench. He's just knocked back by the concussive force of the explosion.
Yeah.
So he's lucky he survives at all. He'll be
half expecting to see like blood coming down from his ear.
Exactly. Honestly, for the concussive blast that was, I am shocked. I'll be shocked if he ever hears again.
Because when you see the explosion, the entire warehouse is like destroyed.
Yeah. Like the refinery has like large portions of the refinery are now a crater. And it is a magnificent explosion. Definitely a top tier explosion, especially for, you know, a made for TV movie. Love it. 10 out of 10. Always cry. And basically, Earl, Kate, Grady, Burt, they all go and they're going to walk back to what is the rubble and hopefully find a radio or something that they can, you know, communicate with the outside world.
No, they walk back to what is the matte painting.
Yes, it is a matte painting of the refinery with a crater because there's nothing left.
Yeah.
It is exploded. But Grady mentions that the oil company is on the hook for 28 graboids because which comes to a total of $1.4 million. As they're walking back, Earl makes a suggestion that maybe the oil company also has to charge them for all the shriekers they killed. Although, to be fair, they did blow up the refinery in the process, so maybe that's going to have to be a wash. Just saying, it's going to have to be a wash on that one.
So, in fairness for that one, it's also, they did totally, it was a cheap refinery.
Yeah. Honestly, though, the fact is that as long as, and I hate to say it this way, if only the pole buildings were destroyed and none of the actual like refinery equipment or the oil that might still be there wasn't destroyed. Yeah, it's going to suck, but it's not going to suck that badly for the company.
And depending on how big, you know, the prospect is of how much is in reserve, estimated to be in reserve there.
Yeah. So
Still paying them off isn't a big deal.
Yeah, they'll probably be fine. It's better that they destroy the shriekers than the potential loss of life that would have come from this whole event.
Yeah.
Because they had already, I mean, at that point, they had stopped basically a full shrieker invasion because if they had 28 graboids that had turned into three shriekers each, that would have been a large mess. That's 84 shriekers just initially. And then at that point, that's 84 with a potential exponential growth. So realistically, they've done a huge service, not just for the area. Yeah. I mean, but Grady gets it into his head that, you know, if we could find another one of these shriekers, we should really just kind of have it for the theme park.
Yeah. It's just like, no.
Yeah. And so he keeps, you know, and Earl's basically like, nope, I'm just going to take my money and do the smart move on this one this time. And Grady ends it with, oh, come on, Earl, this could be your big third chance. And the movie's ended. Again, love it. It's still one of my favorite ones. It's still, I love. Oh, God. It's basically downhill from here.
You haven't watched them all yet. You don't know.
You're okay, fine. But I'm going to tell you this right now. I somehow do not think Tremors 6 or 7 are going to, because 3 is definitely a downgrade. It's not the worst, but it's a downgrade.
Yeah.
I've seen 4 and 5. I don't know how much more. I don't think they get progressively worse, but
or exponentially.
Yeah, but I have a hard time believing.
Yeah.
That somehow 6 and 7 are going to somehow just re-ramp this up to the top. Yeah. I have a really hard time believing that. It's just, and you know, again, at this point, it all is, again, we kind of lose, I hate to say it, Bert's a fun character, But the movie's now basically become the Burt Gummer show. Yeah. It's all about him and or in Tremors 4, because I do know that one takes place in the past, a relative of Burt's.
Yes.
You know, it's basically now Michael Gross's baby that becomes something else, and it's fine.
Yeah.
But again, I'm not saying that I'm not looking forward to these. I love the movies in general, but they're going to lose what I think is some of their heart. And now it's really more about how can we make the monsters better? Damn the science.
Whatever. So I will talk a little bit about some of the, so this is also, cause I was just looking up Michael Gross. So Michael Gross was on a show with Michael J. Fox.
Family Ties.
Also, I like this cause I was just reading his book. Gross is a passionate rail fan with an extensive collection of railroad antiques.
Nice.
And I think he was like he was either given an award or giving an award at the BO, rail museum.
Oh, neat. Yeah,
yeah. Talking strictly from the biology perspective. So there's this, I was watching, it's Sci-Fi Safari, YouTube. And the guy brought up actually some good, interesting points, because he was like to just go over the biology and everything else. And because I was watching a bunch of them to see if anybody actually has heard of anything that can do the multi-generational things.
Yeah.
And no, nobody ever does. But he did bring up something. It's called polyphenism. Oh. Basically, so polyphenism is a phenomenon where two or more distinctive phenotypes are produced by the same genotype. So for example, polyphenism is most compelling in examples of polyphenism provide some of the most compelling systems for study of epigenetics. So epigenetics, so DNA is your blueprint.
Yeah.
What epigenetics study is, how is that DNA being expressed? Because what happens with in epigenetics, it's not everything is expressed. Like certain things are just not accessible. And we're like trying to figure out why that is. So in this is a great example of why is it that you can have a queen bee,
mm-hmm.
a worker bee. They are genetically the same.
Okay. So
certain things, like certain cues for how you get a queen bee is like they have to eat like royal jelly. And so that activates them. Everything else like that activates those particular genes.
Yeah.
Those triggers are activated. So that's how that works. Still genetically the same, but different. Same thing with when you have those fish that when they're in, like when they are born in a cave, they have certain DNA just turned off. And as compared to if they live outside of the cave. So they're the same species, but they look drastically different. So in this, it could have, a really complicated DNA where they all have the same DNA, but it like will turn on, metamorphose into legs.
Oh.
So that's why you'd have a shrieker that has legs.
Okay.
And other stuff like that. And it's like, that's interesting because it was like, because the thing about it is it's not the same entity.
Yeah.
And that's the weirdest aspect, because normally with metamorphosis, it's the same creature.
Yeah.
And then this is also something that he brought up with, and this would actually make sense with the shriekers, with their whole eating, and then they make new babies.
Mm-hmm.
So what if the shrieker has like all the, like, so like women have all their eggs already pre-made when they're like gestating.
Okay.
So you are just as old as, or at least half your DNA is just as old as your mom.
Ah, gross.
So what happens if the shrieker has like all these basically not fully developed babies or embryos already in it? So it's not that it's making an entirely new entity every time it pukes out something. It's something that is already there, and it gets activated once a certain caloric intake is hit.
So it's just reaching that point where it's now I can actually create I can finish the process of creating this baby because it's met whatever criteria is required.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, that's a really smart idea. And that would make a lot of sense. So yeah, it's like, no, we're not making an entirely new thing because that once again, not how thermodynamics or conservation of mass works.
Yeah. No. So it isn't just the idea of, well, I mean, now with Tremors 3, we get to learn about a whole new subspecies, which is...
Not subspecies. Life cycle. Life stage.
Yes.
But it was also really cool. The guy also pointed out something. So the graboids have three tongue, like mouth, like grabby tongues.
Yeah, yeah.
If you actually look at the shrieker tongue,
yeah,
it actually does look like it's three fused into one.
Okay. Because
there's these two little bumps.
Yeah. Interesting. I like this movie. It's tops as far as that goes. And Dean did say it there. This feels like, as far as sequels go, it feels just like going from Alien to Aliens. You know, yeah. It's just as good.
Yeah.
And it does feel like there's still a lot of the same heart and a lot of the same soul that from the original Tremors. They try to keep the science, you know, they try and keep the science in the science fiction.
Yeah.
Where it feels like, I know, like, this feels like, yeah, I mean, it's believable enough. Like, I didn't have to suspend my disbelief to that
absurd levels.
Yeah. So it's fine. It worked great. And again, it's impressive what they did as far as that goes, because this was a made-for-TV movie.
Yeah.
This is not one where it's like, didn't hit theaters. It never was intended to hit theaters. And they knew how to keep the production value cheap, you know? Basically, film in one big open location, you know, small cast, you know, and then having basically dealing with freaking puppets. That's it.
Like, and that's using. So I was like, it's not good CGI.
No.
But it was used for when CGI, when you couldn't use puppets.
Yeah.
That's why, that's when CGI is good. Cause it was like, okay, clearly you can't have a puppet of like six.
Yeah.
Stacked on top of each other. Cause I'm like, it won't work. You can't.
Yeah. No, it would actually feel more like, again, same thing. You can't have a puppet shrieker running. It won't look good.
Yeah.
But I get it. Like, again, the CGI was utilized minimally, but necessarily where it needed to be. And that's fine. And again, I'm not expecting it to be Jurassic Park levels of CGI. You know, that still holds up. What I am expecting, but I got what I would expect from made-for-TV movie. We have a limited budget CGI.
And like I said last time, 100% had a lower budget.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's been a while since I've seen either Tremors 3 or 4. So maybe I'll be wrong. Maybe I'll be pleasantly surprised by them. I don't think I will. I don't have a lot of confidence in it, but I'm going to go in with an open mind and an open heart, and we'll see, because probably much lower expectations. Yeah. And we've kind of hit our point. I mean, we've gotten through it.
We get to talk about Tremors 3.
Tremors 3? Tremors 3, the ass blastening. You know I'm not wrong.
No. It was like, but I also don't remember what their tagline was.
It doesn't matter. It's the ass blastening now. It doesn't matter. Fine. Time to leave and be sad. All right. Bye.
Bye, everybody.
A Real Creature Feature is created by Matt Kuklinski, starring Matt Kuklinski, Michael Seaman, and Dean Snow. Any questions, comments, artwork, or general inquiries can be sent to realcreaturefeature@gmail.com. You can view any submitted fan art and pictures on our Instagram @arealcreaturefeature. Some episodes were recorded weeks in advance due to our current sporadic recording schedule. Any comments left will be seen and addressed at some point, and you will be credited unless you tell us you wish to remain anonymous. If you like the podcast, please leave a review on the podcast app that works best for you. It really helps us out. Also, tell your friends, enemies, and total strangers about the podcast. They might enjoy it too, and that can bring us all closer together.
because that's the one thing that makes me enjoy. If I go into a movie, and I found this, if I go into a movie with little to no expectation, I can enjoy it a lot more.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's why I enjoyed Superman Returns more than a lot of people, because I did not expect anything to be.
Yeah. And I think that's so hard because, especially with trailers nowadays, it's like everyone, like, you know everything about everything with a movie before you go see it.
Which is why I stopped watching trailers.
Yeah.
If I know I'm going to want to go see a movie, I just don't watch the trailer for it.
I might see one, but then after that, I'm done. Just because it's like the one that I can't remember which movie it was that I saw. But when I went to it, I had absolutely no idea. Like, that was only the first 20 minutes of the movie was all in the trailers. And it's like, after that, it might have actually been, now that I think about it, it might have been Parasite. Because you get to that movie, and if you've ever seen it, have you seen Parasite? Oh, it's a treat.
I've heard it's really, really, really good.
It's incredible. And the trailer is basically only goes through about maybe a quarter of the first act. And then it's like the back quarter of the first act.
Oh, and or like the movie Annabelle.
Yeah.
Or no, is it Annabelle? It's a movie.
It's one of the Conjuring movies.
Yeah. No, not Annabelle. Or it's basically a little girl gets kidnapped and she's like a ballerina.
Oh.
But in the trailer, it's revealed, oh, she's a vampire.
Oh, I don't know this one.
Yeah, it's coming out. It's a new one. Okay. And it was just like, oh, you just revealed the major twist. So I'm like, yeah. You either means that there's going to be another major twist.
Hopefully.
Or you suck at making freaking movies.
Well, and it could just be, maybe that's not like, again, if that's like the first third of the movie, like if that's like within the first quarter of the movie, fine. You've kind of revealed something, but maybe it's not about that then. It could be about something else, which would be fine too.
Yeah, if they do it
right. Yeah, but yeah, Parasite, I can't even tell you anything because there is like such a huge twist that occurs like right in the middle of the second act of Parasite that when you see it, you're just like, you could have told me anything. You could have asked me to guess where this movie was going to go, and I would never have thought it would go there. Like, in truth, I would have never believed it would have gone there. And yeah, it's nuts. It's just plain nuts. Dean, your opinion on Parasite?
The eats.
That actually feels like the best review I've ever heard of that movie. Because it's really about that. It's such a weird cycle too. Because it is all about genuinely without giving it away.
Making the middle class eat the other middle class and underclass.
Yeah, it's insane. It's insane. And
class movement is a real thing. You just have to put the others below you lower.
Oh, it's nuts. Yep. Oh, it's like. Because, like, I don't think I'm going to give away anything.
You see bootstraps in the store? Buy those bootstraps. Put them on. And then pull yourself up by them.
Yep.
You lazy ass.
Yeah. But the whole thing is, the twist comes because there's a very specific event. There's a typhoon that hits the area very quickly. And that's where everything comes to a head in this movie. It becomes a whole different animal during the typhoon. And it's a crazy film. Love it. 100% recommend it. Bong Joon-ho knows how to make a movie about the horrors of the capitalist system. Like,
nice.
Yeah, honestly, he's a very brilliant director as far as that goes. But,
yeah.
All right, well.
Yeah, because you guys want to go see Dune.